Hi everyone, welcome back to They See Dreamers, a podcast exploring the stories of South Asian trailblazers living in Britain, those who dare to dream across borders, generations and expectations. I want to go past a singular definition of South Asians and create a vivid tapestry of the experience, including generations of dreams deferred, obstacles overcome and boundaries transcended through a spirit of determination. In this second series, we're doing something a little different. Each guest will also spotlight one Desi dreamer who shaped their creative outlook, someone who paved the way, inspired them, or whose story needs to be remembered. In this episode, I'll be talking to Saloni, a UK-based singer who blends classical South Asian sounds with contemporary Western music influences. She's known for her soulful voice and genre-hopping collaborations, and incredibly, she can sing in 10 different languages. You might know her from her appearances on BBC Asian Network. I'm so excited to speak with her about her musical inspirations, her creative process, and the powerful Desi dreamer who continues to influence her path. So join me as we welcome Saloni to Desi Dreamers. Hi Saloni, welcome to Desi Dreamers.
Hey.
How are you? How's your week been?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. It's been a busy time. We're recording this towards the end of the year, so there's a lot of things to wrap up, yeah. And there's a lot of sort of events and things going on, so balancing and juggling all of that's always tricky.
No, I hear that.
But has your last couple of months been?
Yeah, I've been pretty busy. A couple of months actually. I left my full-time job recently.
Oh my God.
So that has been crazy. I'm trying to figure out a routine within music and just putting all my attention to this, and it feels good finally. Like I feel like I'm in a good place. So that's nice. But it's been really busy. Headline show releases, wow. A load of things going on,
so
and like lots of planning for like the new year and releases for next year. Gonna do a few international trips and stuff, so lots going on.
Super exciting. I can't wait to hear all about it and talk about it. And there's so much to discuss about your journey and your background, and also like how everything's fed into each other and different inspirations you've had throughout that time. So I think I wanted to start talking about like all of your creative processes today and like what you do day to day as part of your creative process.
Sure.
So I think a good way to sort of think about that would be to talk about like a recent project or something that you've done that was especially meaningful or high profile that you had a new creative process for, or you sort of journeyed through start to finish of something really exciting.
I guess I could talk about Palo Lago, which I guess is a high-profile one. It did really well. So, yeah, that one, I collaborated with an artist called Bilal Shaheed. We first collaborated a couple years ago when I dropped my first, like, trilingual song in Telugu, Bangla, and English called Nigundelona. And that was, like, my first taste of, like, a mini-viral moment. It had, like, a million views on YouTube and did really well on socials. It was, like, the first song, and to date, my only song that has, like, charted in the official UK charts.
Wow, that's
so exciting.
Which
was huge. Thank you. Like, I've had iTunes and stuff before, but never, like, the actual, like, official charts. So that was really cool. So, yeah, we thought, you know, let's bring it back. It did so well. I think that was the first time, like, I was introduced into the Bengali community. Everyone loved it, and they just wanted some more of it. So we kind of did, like, a 2.0 kind of thing. I guess we did. So we kind of came back into the studio and worked on something completely new. We didn't really know what exactly we were working on, was it whether it was a project for myself or a collab. But when we kind of thought of it, we kind of, I forgot what we put as a reference. Oh, so we like worked, we used a Tamil track actually as a reference called Asakura.
Such a banger.
Such at the time, I think because we did it earlier this year. So it was like, it was quite trending at the time.
Yeah.
This year, meaning 2025.
And
like just loved the vibe, the Afrobeats. And that was just kind of what was going in. And I'd been listening to that a lot. Both of us had been listening to that sort of vibe a lot. So we kind of like took that as a bit of a reference and thought, okay, how can we, like, you know, take inspiration from this track, because we were listening to it so much, and we just thought of melodies and kind of just kind of the way I work is like we'll get a beat, so but I'll put together a beat for us, and then I was just humming a load of melodies, and that's how I tend to work a lot, is just hum a load of melodies, and then based on that we kind of then chop bits of melody, like we record everything, we just kind of put it down on paper, we don't really, it doesn't flow, but like we'll just piece it, and then that's when things piece together, when you like take snippets of different bits, and you get your chorus, you get your verse, you get like your bridge and everything, and then we're like, oh, this is a vibe, like this feels like something we can, you know, do the whole, you know, duet back and forth sort of thing on. And so we did, and I basically just go la 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 to all these melodies, and then I think of lyrics. So the English lyrics I sort of write myself along with Bilal. Mm-hmm. We had Reveal in the studio as well, so it was like a three-way production, even though just two artists were on it. Mm-hmm. But like the writing wise was like a three-way collab. Mm-hmm. And then we got the English lyrics written, and then we sent it off to get it written off in our respective languages, because I don't write in Telugu, but mm-hmm. I get it written in Telugu when I'm yeah. singing it. Same with Hindi, Punjabi, mm-hmm. Bengali, whatever. So we got it written, came back, and then we just recorded the audio, and it all came together.
That's so exciting.
Yeah, thank
it's
you.
It's so interesting to hear your sort of humming the melodies and singing the melodies and then putting lyrics yeah. to it afterwards. Do you feel like you almost have like a stock of lyrics and things that when thoughts come to you, you think that would be a really good lyric in a song, and then you like apply it to the melodies almost?
Sometimes. Actually, that used to be a way I used to work before, like a few years ago, like mm-hmm. with English lyrics, because I yeah. would like just have anytime I think of something, I just like have it written down. And to be fair, yeah. I still have that block mm-hmm. of lyrics somewhere. Yeah. And like, it's so weird. I have it in my email drafts. I don't know why I don't have it on docs, but somewhere, for some reason, I have it on my email drafts. So sometimes I go back to that. Mm-hmm. But I feel like more recently, I've just kind of been going off the vibe that has been in the studio mm-hmm. or like, it's not something that I'd stocked up on before. It's like, mm-hmm. think of it in the moment. Mm-hmm. I've been very much on the kind of like completely new, completely thinking of it on the spot sort of vibe mm-hmm. recently. It sometimes changes and I go back to like the old lyrics that I've written. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so like I do have a stock, but I haven't been going back to that very recently. Mm-hmm. And especially when it's like different languages, I tend to get it written according to mm-hmm. the melody, because sometimes the lyrics that get sent to me that I have from ages ago for a different song maybe mm-hmm. doesn't really always suit the new melodies.
Yeah, that makes
so
sense.
So it doesn't, and like maybe not the vibe of the song either. Mm-hmm. So it's really, really dependent. Like the one thing with like creative stuff, with music especially, is just mm-hmm. like, you really see how it is. Like, there's no set direction. You just kind of improv. Improv is like yeah. the best word for the creative really? Process.
And it sounds much more natural as
yeah,
well if it flows
sure.
that way.
For sure, for sure. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's how we kind of came across with the audio. We knew it was going to be a banger the second like we put it together. We were like, okay, this is a really good song. Except I didn't think it would go as well as it did. Like, it got like, I think it's on like 18 million views or something on
wow,
TikTok, which is crazy.
That's super exciting.
Thank you. But this was the first time like I didn't do a music video per se. I always mm-hmm. do music videos for my songs, like mm-hmm. I did up until about last year. Mm-hmm. And this was the first time where I was like, you know what, let's like, because to do that, to be able to be consistent with music, it's tough to do music videos because budget wise, time wise, mm-hmm. it can get exhausting and can mm-hmm. cause like burnout a lot quicker. Mm-hmm. So I want to try and make it more sustainable to create music rather than it like feeling like a chore to put out a release. Like mm-hmm. music, we put together and like that's vibey. But then when it comes to actually releasing stuff, it can feel a bit longed out if you're putting music videos for every single one. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to find like a way to be more sustainable with it. Mm-hmm. So this time we just focused on content for social media, but not mm-hmm. like a full blown out music video or anything. Mm-hmm. So this is the first time we did that. We got someone on board to literally shoot content on their iPhone
really?
And shot like maybe 15-20 pieces of content. Mm-hmm. And that's what we put out. And that's what got in these millions of views on socials. Mm-hmm. Influencers in Bangladesh just picked it up without, like, it was so organic. Like, you yeah. would have thought we would have put money into this in terms of ads or influencer mm-hmm. spend, but absolutely nothing. Literally yeah. just the video being shot. So this track naturally did really well. And it feels like, it's something, and that I think at this time I was actually working full time as well, but I wasn't in a good place mentally with my full time work. Mm-hmm. I was in finance, so I dreaded it. But I think it kind of gave me the signal that, you know, like things are going well, like mm-hmm. I can sort of leave like my full time job and just put all my attention to music. And I felt like it all felt like a bit of a sign to mm-hmm. just do music. So it's a very, even though it might not be seen on the outside, like mm-hmm. internally, it feels like a very statement sort of release for me and like yeah. a big moment in my life to think, you know, like I'm going to leave my job yeah. now, I'm going to do this because of the success that it did. And yeah. it gave me some confidence. Like I think I was feeling a little low, mm-hmm. but this really boosted that confidence to like motivate me to just release more regularly now.
That's so exciting. And it does sound really pivotal in that until that moment you were sort of trying to balance two different things
yep.
and something that I guess traditionally in like the culture that we're from yep. is more of the done thing and yep. more of the like the stable route mm-hmm. and to sort of leap into something that yeah. seems a bit more unknown. yep. It's so cool that you had that moment this year.
Thank
I'm so
you.
Happy for you.
Thank
congratulations.
You.
So tell me more about kind of that transition. Like, so when did it happen mm-hmm. and what were the things that told you, yeah, I really could do this full time?
Yeah.
And how has it been since you have gone full time? What surprised you about that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's only been a couple months, so there's not so much I could say.
Yeah.
But it's, I think the moment I'd been in full time work things like, because I graduated a couple years ago, and I've kind of been in and out of full-time work. So I've had two big full-time jobs. One was at a record label, major record label actually, and then one was completely different, into finance, into one of our biggest retailers in the UK. But I think it was getting to a point where I was struggling to balance both of them. And I said to myself, you know, I'm not giving my best attention to either thing. And with finance, it was great. And I was like, I was good at it. But it came to a point where it just didn't feel like I was fully happy with the work that I was doing. Whereas with music, I'm living and I feel like I feel a lot happier. And I think that's what made me take the leap. But the worry with, like, you know, it, especially South Asians, I guess, is that there's not many people around us that have taken the creative route to be able to go to them for guidance or mentorship, or like, you just don't see so many people looking like you do that career path, which is crazy, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to do it in the first place, because I wanted to be that representation for someone younger than me that, you know, thought, oh, she's done it, I can do it, sort of thing. And like, you do see a few here and there, but it's tough to get a hold of them to guide you and everything, or like, it still feels like quite an unknown path. And I'll be honest, even though I've left now, it still feels like a bit of an unknown path, but I'm getting there with like networks and just trying to push myself out there and try and narrow myself and stuff. But yeah, I just thought, like, I'm young. Is there, if there's any point where I can just like give it my all, it's probably now. Like, I don't have huge responsibilities. I moved back home with my parents and I was like, this is my time to like just give, like, give it that 100%. And look, if it doesn't work out in a couple of years, then fine, I can always go back to a 9-to-5. But I feel like it's tough to like, I really wanted to just make that leap and kind of bet on myself a bit.
Of course.
So yeah, that's kind of where I am. And I'm seeing how it is. Like, to go from, you know, working under someone sort of thing to then being your own boss, like, music seems fun and creative, and it is, it 100% is, because it's like, you live it, like, it's so great, but it also has its downsides, and you have to think of it as like, it's business essentially. And so you're your own boss, you need to try and figure out what's the best productive use of your time, and no one's going to tell you, oh, we need this delivered by this time. That's, it's all on you. So it's like, I think that's been my biggest challenge over the last couple of months, is like being my own boss and trying to tell myself, like, what are the best things to do? How can I keep motivated? How can I keep determined to like continue without like, without slacking off a bit? And I'm like, I'm known to be quite a, like, what is it called? Like, a disciplined person. Like, I'm so organized. Organized is probably the better word. Like, I'm very organized. I've got like my timetables. I've got my to-do list. I've got all of that. But even then, it still feels a bit tough. Like, even when, like, with someone that's so organized, and for it to still feel like, oh no, what's going on? So I think it's only natural. So getting into that routine has been the challenge. And the thing is with this, when you're, I think it's any freelancer, forget about creatives, any freelancer in general, it's like, there are some really busy periods and then some periods where it's like, nothing's going on. And it's like, learning to like handle that balance and preparing your mindset to be able to deal with those things and to be like, when there are those quiet days, and to tell yourself it's okay to not be working, because sometimes with me especially, I feel like, because I have such busy days, I'm so used to like the busy sort of thing, when there's barely like not much going on, I'm just like, I feel guilty for not working right now.
I have a product, is literally the same. I have a productivity problem where I'm free and I'm like, well, I should use this time to do every single chore on the planet.
Exactly.
Earth. Like, it's literally crazy.
Literally.
So I totally relate. I think it's a thing, like, I think it's a work ethic thing. I think we've been raised that way.
Exactly.
To, like, constantly be productive and constantly have, like, products and outputs and things. And so when we don't have that, we feel almost antsy, like we need to do something.
Literally.
So I so get that. And also, like you said, if you don't really have like a guidance of like what that sort of career looks like, you have to build that from scratch.
Exactly.
So knowing what like productivity looks like in a career like this is really difficult,
because
we don't really have an example of what that means.
100%. And I think the best way to kind of get around that is just speaking to loads of people in the scene. Look out for mentorships that are around there. Like, no matter where you are in your career, it's always good to have a mentor. And there are so many like people that kind of help with that in the music industry, like help musicians, musicians union or PRS. Like, there's all these different like representatives that can help you in that way, and it's just, you know, finding them and kind of getting yourself into those circles and stuff.
Definitely.
That's kind of what I've been doing, really.
And also, at one point, you will be that mentor and you will give that back to the next sort of generation.
I
so that's
to.
Super exciting. I want to hear all about your show.
That
was the main thing that I wanted to talk about.
Oh,
your headline,
you.
Your debut headline show. So tell me all about it.
Oh, it feels crazy that I've done it. Like, it was so, like, I'm so baffled that it's actually happened. Like, yeah. It feels so good that it's like, I put that out there and, mm-hmm. you know, it was a success. Like, it went so well. And the lead up to it, I was really anxious about ticket sales or, like, you know, am I going to give the best performance or not? Because it's the first time and I've never performed for so long. It was like an hour and a half set mm-hmm. with a band. I was selling my own tickets. Like, I've never done this before. How is it going to kind of pan out? But things really do work out in the end. Like, you just got to have faith. And yeah. I think especially with our culture, it's like just the music culture in general, ever mm-hmm. since, I don't know if it's because of since COVID or just mm-hmm. the way the world is right mm-hmm. now, people don't buy things until last minute. Mm-hmm. So, like, you have no way to predict what the turnout is going to be until literally the day of.
Oh, really?
So so that was fairly anxiety driving for me, to be fair. Like, am I going to sell enough tickets? But mm-hmm. we did in the end.
Oh, so good.
And we'd been working on, like, the set list and practicing it for like a month. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was such a good time, like, jamming with, I had Ankush on guitar and Inertia on piano. Mm-hmm. And we just put the set list together with my originals, covers, some mashups. And we'd, like, been practicing for like a month beforehand. And it was just really fun, you know, practicing and just kind of being surrounded by a lot of music in the lead up to it. And then the actual day went amazing. Like, the audience was singing along. Aww. There were so many hiccups during the set, but it was like good hiccups. Like, yeah. It was like candid moments and people would laugh along with you. Aww. And, like, you know, some people got, like, people would get emotional at times because of, like, the backstory that I talk about within, like, between each song. Mm-hmm. Like, I really tried to make it, like, you know, it was called an evening with Saloni. Mm-hmm. So it's like a very close-knit, like, small room of people. Mm-hmm. There were about, I think, 60, maybe 50, 60, 70-ish around mm-hmm. that, around that ballpark. Mm-hmm. And it was just, like, a very intimate space. And the venue was beautiful. I thought it really, really added to it, Folklore yeah. Hoxton. Mm-hmm. It was really cute, like, nice back, like, nice decor and everything. It felt very homely. And it just really felt like I could connect with my audience. And, like, mm-hmm. you know, it wasn't just a regular audience at, like, a Mela or a festival mm-hmm. or, like, a whatever. Like, I've performed at arenas performed at one arena, Wembley Arena, which was amazing. And that's a completely different feeling. But this one is like, I could connect one-on-one with the audience. Yeah,
There's an intimacy there.
Yeah. And that's what felt, I think that was the best part mm-hmm. of it. Like, seeing people, like, people came from Manchester and I was like, whoa, there's wow. someone coming from Manchester for my wow. show all the way to London. Like, I never thought that could be possible.
Yeah. And also, I think you mentioned, like, the intimacy and you're creating a community.
Yeah.
And to have that as your debut headline show, to be like, this is what I'm prioritizing. It's not just selling out arenas and actually like creating a community that
exactly.
really connects with
who
my
are your
work.
Core fans that are gonna come buy a ticket to come mm-hmm. watch you, you know, come yeah. and get your merch, come and like interact with you and stay with mm-hmm. you for the journey, like for the rest of the career.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, I felt like this was the first place to do that. And mm-hmm. obviously being I've had a lot of my music career in London, so I was like, even though I'm not like from London, mm-hmm. I went to uni here, but mm-hmm. my home is Milton Keynes. Mm-hmm. But I just thought, you know, let's do London and see what happens. And it was amazing. It was really nice.
So exciting. And I can't wait to come to the next one. So sad I couldn't make this
no,
one.
No, it's okay.
But I'm sure you've got many more plans in the pipeline and I can't wait to see what you get up to over the next year. I wanted to go back a bit and talk mm-hmm. about like your creative beginnings and yeah. some of your inspirations.
Sure.
You sort of briefly mentioned in the intro, but you can sing in so many different languages. So first you've got to break that down for us and tell us everything that you can sure. sing in, but also tell us sort of what inspired you to do that. Mm-hmm. How did you get to grips with all those different languages, and what is it about singing yeah. in lots of different languages that's important to
yeah,
you?
Yeah, sure. So singing about 10 different languages.
Crazy.
Thanks. So South Asian languages. So mm-hmm. I guess 11 if you count English as well. Mm-hmm. But basically, those 10 languages include, well, I think a bit more now that I've like since then. Because basically, I took like a gap year between school and uni. Mm-hmm. And in that time, it was COVID, so I was stuck mm-hmm. at home. Mm-hmm. And I took that time to, you know, just like, I feel like I grew up on a lot of South Asian culture, whether that's mm-hmm. Bollywood, Tollywood, Kollywood, classical. I learned Carnatic music growing mm-hmm. up, which is South Indian classical. Mm-hmm. And I've just been surrounded by Asian music, especially mm-hmm. with me being first generation. Mm-hmm. My parents came from India. Mm-hmm. So like I was always surrounded by the culture. Mm-hmm. And we have family friends in all these different languages. And in that time, I was like, you know what, it'd be so cool to combine all these different languages. So I created mm-hmm. a mashup in that year that included 10 different languages. Mm-hmm. So that was Telugu, Tamil, Kannada, Malayalam, Gujarati, Marathi, Punjabi, Odia, Hindi, and I'm missing one and I don't remember which one it is. Bengali. How can I miss Bengali? Bengali. So I did a mashup in all those languages. Mm-hmm. And I had family friends in each and every one of those. Mm-hmm. So I don't speak in those languages. I don't understand all the languages. I speak and understand Telugu because that's my mother tongue. Mm-hmm. I understand Hindi and can brokenly speak it mm-hmm. because I literally caught my Hindi from Star Plus and Bollywood movies. And then Punjabi is so close to Hindi that I understand Punjabi as well. Yeah. And then Tamil, not too much, but kind of.
Because it's quite similar to Telugu, right?
I wouldn't say it's similar to Telugu. It's just that my guru that I learned Carnatic music from was Tamil. So mm-hmm. I'd sing a lot of Tamil music growing up. I actually sang a lot more Tamil than I did Telugu.
Best music.
It is one of the best, for sure. But yeah, I grew up in a lot of it from my guru. So that's where I learned a lot of it. Okay. But yeah, I wouldn't be able to understand or speak it per se. Mm-hmm. But those are the four languages I'm most comfortable singing in, mm-hmm. plus English. But yeah, so because I had all the, I just love the languages, you know? Mm. Each one has its own speciality. And I love the music in all these different languages. And I thought, why not bring them all together and be that person? I thought that could be a bit of a USP as well. Mm-hmm. Not many people can sing in all these different languages. So I was like, let me be that person that can. Mm-hmm. And so I took it on me to try and do covers in all these different languages. I did that mashup and I would connect with a family friend that knew the language and get mm-hmm. them to check the pronunciation for me, tell me the meaning. So I wasn't singing something completely silly and I was conveying the meaning across with my pronunciation and with my emotion while singing. So yeah, that's how I kind of grasped it. And anytime I try to sing in a new language, I'll go check it with a family friend that can correct my pronunciation because I really want to try my best to pronounce things correctly and not butcher it and then offend people in that language and that culture. The reason I did it is just because I love all the different languages and it just feels very cultural. Yeah. And I'm quite a cultural person. Of course. I try to bring that in. Just try and represent all the different cultures.
Yeah. And you mentioned about kind of growing up doing Carnatic singing mm-hmm. and how that was an important part of your sort of learning of languages. But obviously I'm sure that would be an important sort of musical route as well.
100%. It gave me the base. Yeah. I wouldn't say I'm so much of a classical singer now. Mm-hmm. I kind of dropped that off and kind of went more into the Western mm-hmm. urban sort of scene and the fusion mm-hmm. and the light music, basically. Mm-hmm. But it really gave me the base to mm-hmm. be able to know rags, to know the gamakas and stuff like that. It really mm-hmm. helps. And I'm actually, because I kind of paused it and didn't practice it for the last few years, I've actually started again from my basics, but in Hindustani, which is another North Indian classical music. Mm-hmm. So, because it's quite an important base that I feel you should have. Mm-hmm. And it really helps kind of just with the improv, with just vocal strength and mm-hmm. everything. Any classical form, even if it's Western classical, mm-hmm. opera or something, it gives you good base to then mm-hmm. go into light music and pop and stuff like that.
Definitely. So. And do you feel those sort of musical roots have helped you in sort of how you've transitioned? Or do you feel sometimes there could be an instance of I'm so used to this and now I have to transition and it's a new mindset and I have to learn this whole new thing?
Bit of both.
Yeah.
Definitely given me the base to be able to be flexible with my voice and it's mm-hmm. given me vocal strength for mm-hmm. sure. But I remember when I was about 13, I was battling between my two roles. I was a 13-year-old learning Carnatic classes and then going and singing pop songs at English competitions and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was really two opposite worlds. Mm. And there was quite the challenge to try and overcome the differences. Mm-hmm. For example, Carnatic or just any classical, Indian classical, you're not supposed to use your head voice. Mm. And it's all supposed to be in chest. Mm-hmm. Whereas in pop music, there were so many you'd go into your head voice, or even Bollywood music, you'd go into your head voice mm. eventually to mm. reach higher notes and stuff. Mm. And so learning to swap and mm. Learn that bridge, there was like so much training to be able to do that. And I'd go to these two different teachers and they'd be like two different things. So it was learning to balance that. But I think that's the beauty of it. Like, mm-hmm. and that gives you the flexibility, that gives you like the versatility to do different genres. So I think it's only helped me, really. Yeah. Like, it might have taken a bit longer than mm-hmm. just focusing on one, but I think that's fine. Like, mm-hmm. I think for it to take longer, it's fine, because then you spend like more time trying to learn your craft, sort of thing. Yeah,
definitely. And you mentioned before about like before you went full time, there was this balance of sort of your day job and mm-hmm. your music career. And I think I'd love to know more about sort of when you were growing up in terms of music playing in your house mm-hmm. and like learning Carnatic music. Obviously, music was a big part of your upbringing.
Yeah.
But did it feel like something on the side and something that you had to balance with academics, and or was it more sort of prioritized and felt like the center of what you were doing? And it was
definitely on the side.
Okay.
But not on, like, if I was to think about it, like other friends that I went to mm-hmm. Carnatic classes with, mm-hmm. for them it was definitely on the side. Like, yeah. they just came because their parents would tell them to, mm-hmm. sort of thing. And to be fair, I went to Carnatic because my mom would force me to go to Carnatic music. I didn't really want to do Carnatic music. I wanted to go do pop songs and Bollywood and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But for me, I think even though it was on the side of academics, it was still a huge part of my life. Mm-hmm. I'd go to Carnatic classes with my friends, but my friends would just do that and nothing else. Mm-hmm. Whereas I would go to that, then I'd go to pop classes, then I'd go to, like, I did artist development, mm-hmm. I'd perform at, like, shows a lot more. When I went to this artist development camp, mm-hmm. because a label scouted me from a competition that I did in the Western scene. They scouted me from that when I was about 13. I joined their label on the artist development side, mm-hmm. and they developed me as an artist in the terms of, you know, it's not just about singing, but it's a whole package. It's about songwriting, it's about how to perform, how to speak to an audience. Mm-hmm. It's about the financial side of it, like collecting your royalties and splits and publishing and master royalties, all of this stuff. So it just gave me a whole, like, a lot, like, I'd go to school, then after school I'd go to this event, like, to these classes. Mm-hmm. Like, big props to my parents, because they'd put me in all of these things, mm-hmm. even if I didn't want to. Yeah. And, like, you'd be surprised that they actually put me into these. I mean, I showed interest, but, like, I guess as a kid you don't really want to do anything mm-hmm. much outside of school, and you just kind of want to chill.
Yeah.
So props to them for, like, pushing me to do it, because I think up until about 15, maybe, I feel like I was, like, really pushed to do things. Mm-hmm. Post that, I was like, okay, now I stopped everything else and just focused on my singing. Mm-hmm. And plus academics, like academics and singing were my two key things. Mm-hmm. I like stopped my badminton, stopped Bharatanatyam, all of that mm-hmm. stuff. Music became a big part of my life later mm-hmm. on. Mm-hmm. But it was always trying to balance academics with my music. Mm-hmm. So I'd wake up in the morning. I was like when it comes to exam season, I'm a morning person, so I'd wake up at 4 or 5 a.m. Oh, wow. Do my like study for exams, go to school in the evening, I'd then go to singing classes.
The commitment.
So,
it was like,
so my whole life I've been used to balancing the two. So this is the mm-hmm. first time I feel like I'm doing my all in to just music, so it's very different.
It is. Sounds very different. And how have your family been sort of in that process? Is there a lot of support? Like, what do you sort of see in the future?
Yeah,
as well,
100%. I could not do any of this without my family. Mm-hmm. And it's for them, it's like whatever makes me happy. Mm-hmm. So at that point right now, it is music, and I want to. And this is what makes me feel like I'm living my true self. And that being said, like, there are so many hurdles to get through, and like there are so many times where like you doubt yourself and stuff, mm-hmm. especially when there's no one telling you what to do and there's no sustainable, like, it's not like you don't know what's gonna happen, you can't predict mm-hmm. it. Whereas with a 9-to-5, it's like, oh, you can predict that you're gonna get like you've got this task to work towards, mm-hmm. someone's telling you to do something, or you know you're gonna get this much amount a month, for example, mm-hmm. financially. Whereas you don't know any of that with mm-hmm. like freelancing or creative side. So that's been a challenge, but I feel like it's worth it because I feel happier.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's really true. And also it's really good that you have sort of like a supportive background mm-hmm. to make sure that they see that and nurture that happiness, because I feel like a lot of listeners might be able to relate to the fact that whilst they might feel happy doing something, there's not necessarily like the structures around them to support mm-hmm. them in that process. So you're very privileged to have that. And I feel the same. Like, I feel very lucky that my parents are very supportive of sort of things I choose to do and make sure that I'm happy within all of it. Because ultimately, like, spending day to day not being happy in what you do, that's just going to grind you down.
100%.
And like the feeling of success, if there is any, will go away anyway.
Yeah.
So it makes sense.
And I feel like I started to feel that with my last job. Mm-hmm. So Yeah.
It's not worth it in the long run. Yeah. And like you said, like now is our time. Like we don't have loads of responsibilities yeah. outside of work. Like yeah. we can be flexible.
Literally,
we
we're not married. We don't have kids. Like we're fine.
And I think that one thing that I've spoken to a lot of previous guests on Desi Dreamers is about is that as first generation immigrants, obviously our parents came and they had a survival instinct to sort of build their family mm-hmm. and build the structures they need yep. to support a family. Mm-hmm. And they've given us that security yep. to make sure that we can like yep. thrive.
Yep.
So maybe it's in our right to thrive exactly. and not just survive.
This is a way, an aunt, so like, I've got loads of aunties, we all have loads yeah. of aunties and uncles, not people that are actually related to us, but people yeah. that we call auntie and uncle. And so this auntie once told me, it was like, it's crazy to see that you, like our kids, are feeling the same way we felt when we first came to the UK.
Mm-hmm.
But that shouldn't be the case because we mm-hmm. came to the UK, we put together a foundation so that our kids don't have to feel the way that we felt.
Yeah.
And that really hit. It was like, mm-hmm. why is it that we're feeling this way when our parents have worked so hard to be able to give us mm-hmm. that? And it's like acknowledging that, being grateful for it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, being like telling yourself that, you know, it's okay, like our parents have worked hard so that mm-hmm. we could be in this place.
Mm-hmm.
Don't take that for granted, mm-hmm. but know that you don't have to push yourself to work the same way that they did. Like,
absolutely.
Work the same way they did in a different manner, mm-hmm. but like not in survival instincts.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So there's that, I guess, mm-hmm. which kind of hit. Because I felt like I've always been like, oh, if something doesn't work out, what's going to happen? Yeah. What's going to happen? But yeah. like, in reality, I do have my parents to fall. And that's a very privileged position to be mm-hmm. in. And it's about acknowledging that and being mm-hmm. like, it's okay to take risks because you do actually have a fallback.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you'll take it, mm-hmm. but like just telling yourself that it's okay if yeah. something happens because you have a fallback and then you can always pick yourself up again yes. after that.
Absolutely. I think it's a really good like, sort of open-minded approach to go into these things with because it allows you to sort of be freely creative mm-hmm. and not put boundaries on sort of what you want to do and yeah. how you want to achieve it, to know that everything's within my remit and like yeah. world's my oyster
yeah.
makes it much easier to sort yeah. of pursue what you want to do yeah. and make a success of it.
Yeah, it's like reminding yourself like really, really worst case scenario, what's going to happen? Are you going to die? No. So like just trying to, that was probably morbid, but but trying to just make, I guess, realistic things of like what is the worst that could happen mm-hmm. and reminding yourself that it's not really that bad mm-hmm. the worst thing that can happen. So yeah.
For sure. I think I wanted to understand a little bit more in terms of your sort of cultural upbringing and also your inspirations. Something that I'm trying to do in this podcast is understand a Desi Dreamer inspiration for everyone mm-hmm. and sort of tap back into one inspirational, either historical or current figure who's mm-hmm. really inspired you, and what is it about their life or their music or their creativity that's inspired you. Doesn't necessarily have to be obviously from your creative sector.
Okay.
I think something that you mentioned earlier was about like lots of different people that you've worked with and different people that you've sort of learned from in a role model mentorship way, but also you could pick throughout time anyone.
Yeah,
talk to me about Desi Dreamer like, inspiration.
I feel like I've got so many different yeah. ones, like I can't pick one.
Mm-hmm. You can do some honorable mentions and then do one.
Well, I would give it to my parents. Like, mm-hmm. they are a huge part of my inspiration. Like, mm-hmm. my mum and my dad both put together. Like, mum for, like, pushing me into things mm-hmm. and not taking no for an answer and forcing me to go to certain lessons. Dad with his inspirational quotes and, like he'll just sit me down and lecture me for a while. But, like, mm-hmm. it's all actually added up and kind of, it's made me who the, like, the person that I am today. Mm-hmm. So I owe everything to the two of them. But on the creative end, I feel like I have a few. So, like, I grew up loving, like, Shreya Ghoshal and Taylor Swift. So, like, on opposite ends of the genre. But those two are, like, my biggest, like, that way inspiration. But in terms of, like, actual bridge of the cultures, the first time I'd ever heard it, even though there were so many people before
mm-hmm.
him that I'm going to mention, there were so many people before him that did this stuff, but the first time I heard the bridge of the cultures of East and West was Zach Knight.
Mm-hmm.
So he does Punjabi and English mm-hmm. Combined together, and that was the first time I'd heard it. My friend at school introduced me to him, like put me on his music, and I was like, whoa, this is so cool, like we can actually combine our cultures together. And then from there I started to explore Jay Sean, and I started to explore Origin, and you know, Richie Rich and all of those people. But Zach Knight was like the first person that I'd heard, and I thought, like, you know, I'd love to be someone like this, but the female version, and not just limited to Punjabi music, but to all the different cultures. And that's where I kind of brought in all these different languages, because I was like, I want to be able to do this for all cultures within South Asia, not just one. And then, like, more especially Telugu, because that's my mother tongue, and I've not seen anyone else do it before. So I was like, I want to be that person that does it. And so, yeah, I feel like those are big inspirations to me. And I actually opened for Zach Knight earlier this year, which
incredible.
Was crazy.
Incredible.
Thank you. It feels like a dream come true, because it's like opening for your idol. And I was like, whoa. So that was huge. But yeah, on the creative side, I'd say those kind of people. And like more now, actually, like someone that I think is really cool is Junita Gandhi. Like, I'd love to be like, I feel like
the next person to
Yeah, for sure. I love that vibe. So, yeah.
Tell me more about sort of your opening for Zach Knight.
So I'm in touch with his manager, like just on Insta over a while. And I just messaged. I was like, I'd love to open or work with Zach one day. And I sent my stuff over. And like, you don't always get a response, or like you'll get one saying that Zach's not really looking for someone right now. We'll let you know, blah, blah, blah. And then for this show, which was in Manchester, they were like, come on board. And I was like, whoa, did not expect that. Like, you know, you just kind of like message, but you never really expect anything. Yeah. But it's like, there's no harm in trying. Also, worst that can happen, they say no, and that's it. So I asked, and they were like, yeah. So wow, I was like, crazy. So you said yes. Wow, I'm going to be there.
Something else that you've talked about in a couple of different sort of answers you've said, like this idea of combining different things and doing different languages and experimenting with different genres. And I think that's a super exciting concept. And like when I listen to your music, it's like so cool to like hear all of those sort of like boundaries being transcended. But do you ever have to battle that experimentation side of things with a sense of like authenticity and like what's the root and like what do you pick as that? Like how do you decide that?
No, I agree in a way. It's like, how do you know what language you're going to put on or does it look like you're all over the place? But I think I don't compromise on my identity in the sense that I'm cultured. Like, I feel like that's a big, big part of me, my culture of being South Asian, not just Telugu, but South Asian. So all the different languages of South Asia, from up north Punjabi to down south Tamil, like all of the languages. And I think that's what I hold on to as the thing that I don't compromise on, which is my culture. And like the whole part of me is like combining the cultures, combining the music, so and like my vibe is very, I guess, poppy, pop, R&B, and like kind of what's commercial, I guess, is the word. And I, yeah, I guess that is my vibe. That's the music I listen to, so it's the music that I put out. The only thing sometimes I feel like is, am I leaning towards one language more or whatever? But at the same time, it's like, what language feels natural to the song that I'm creating? Like, I tend to hear something and I'm like, I hear the melody. No language is written on it, nothing. But you just get a vibe of what language is going to go onto it. So then you just get it written in that and don't think too much of it. Just put it out and see what happens, sort of thing. Like, for example, the songs I did with Bilal, like, initially, Nigundalona, the very first one we did together, I had no intention of putting Telugu on it. Like, I thought, you know, my whole point is working with different people to get different languages. So I was like, let me just sing Bengali with him and not sing Bangla, and it'll be English, it'll be a like bilingual track. But in the moment we're like, oh, Telugu could work, and like that was the first ever time you'd heard like Telugu and Bengali together. So like you like I feel like it's just really in the moment and things just kind of spark.
It's almost like, don't overthink it.
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah, 100%. Don't overthink it and you'll stay authentic. That is a good way to say it.
No, I love that. And I think something else I wanted to talk about linked to that is that I'm sure there's been lots of pressures from various different people throughout your sort of career, be it cultural or like personal pressures, but also industry level pressures. And how do you, what's your approach to sort of overcoming pressures to remain true to yourself? Like, what is your thought process behind that?
Good question. I think, well, first I'll take a step back. Like, I'll just try and soak everything in rather than reacting. Like, it's better not to think of something in the moment. Then I'll talk to people that are like my core pillars, like my close-knit team, my parents, because I value their like thoughts a lot. And then I'll see, like, sometimes I'll go back to my vision board or like just when I look at my page, or like when I look at what I initially wanted to do with everything, like, does this align? And if it aligns, great. And if it doesn't, I'll go back and negotiate. And sometimes deals fall through because mm-hmm. it's not aligning with what you want to do. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to say no. And like, I feel like that's a big thing, to say no to certain things. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it turns out to be better. Mm-hmm. Like, there are deals that have happened that, like, that didn't happen in the end, last minute, and mm-hmm. fell through. But it actually happened for the better, because mm-hmm. then it's meant that I was independent, and it was one of my biggest songs, and staying independent mm-hmm. actually benefited me. Mm-hmm. So it was a good thing that the deal fell through. Mm-hmm. So, like, I feel like, again, it's like from situation by situation, and mm-hmm. you kind of take it as it goes, really. Yeah. I feel like there's no method to it. You kind of take a call at the time.
And you mentioned mentorship and communities, and obviously there is a South Asian scene beginning mm-hmm. to pop off. Yeah. There's Daytime is dialed yeah, in, so yeah, many yeah. great organisations. And we actually met at an yeah. event, which is really exciting, a sort of creative careers event. Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear a little bit more about sort of your understanding of your creative community, and who are your go-tos, who have you learned from, and do you ever feel like, as a community identity, we are expected to talk about certain things or act in certain ways that you feel like in any way limits? Or do you feel like it's actually quite inspiring to have like the community aspect that sort of drives things forward?
I feel like I'm quite an open person. Mm-hmm. So then people tend to be a bit open with me. Mm-hmm. I'd like to hope so. Or I feel that way at least. Yeah. So then when I ask a question, mm-hmm. like, to mentors, or mm-hmm. I won't name drop who like I particularly work mm-hmm. with, but like mm-hmm. people that I've worked with in the past, mm-hmm. and like just getting ideas from them, mm-hmm. and just putting yourself out there and asking the questions and making the network. And if they don't come back, then fair, but mm-hmm. if they do, then it's great. At least you've got some, like, you've got someone to like bounce ideas off. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've had too much like no's. Like, people mm-hmm. People are fairly open, and I feel like it's great to have that community and mm-hmm. just like talk about things. And if they don't open up, then maybe it's a sign that, you know, they're not the right fit as a friend, as a mm-hmm. mentor, or as like a peer mm-hmm. is the word. So yeah, I mean, it's great that's why it's good to go to these events like South mm-hmm. Asian Creatives or mm-hmm. Daytimers dialed in events and mm-hmm. stuff, because you meet like-minded people. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's just like, and like someone, like one out of 10 might click, you never know. But like, putting yourself out there and getting that advice. Yeah. I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it definitely does. I think it's a difficult one to sort of navigate, because I think from my perspective, I work a full-time job. I'm mm-hmm. sort of like where you were
yeah.
a few months ago, mm-hmm. I guess, trying to balance sort of audio work and my understanding of my creative work mm-hmm. with my day job. And I feel like the creative communities are where I can really see, like, visualize what an alternative would look like
yeah.
in a way that I can't really talk about that at my job or with my family yeah. because no one else has really experienced yeah. anything like
exactly.
that.
Exactly, yeah.
So I think that's a good way of being able to see, not just like in a role model sense, but literally just see examples of people who took that leap mm-hmm. and are doing that full time. Mm-hmm. So we listened to Aarti speak at Dialed In, and yeah. she literally had the transition that
yeah.
you had
yeah.
and sort of hearing her talk about like how she's very risk averse and she'll always be risk averse.
Yeah.
So she literally did a calculation yeah. of, can I survive? Yeah, like yeah, as yeah. a full-time DJ
yeah, yeah.
so like hearing people talk through things yeah, like that was like yeah. a super interesting experience. And I think sure. having like a community of people who somewhat have had similar lifestyles or upbringings to you mm-hmm. to be able to say, this is how I did what I did
yeah.
and being able to sort of compare how that yeah. interacts with your yeah. lifestyle is a really interesting yeah. way to think about it. But no, good to hear about all of your sort of inspirations and background. Thank I want to talk a little bit about dreaming forward now. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give to someone, a young Desi creative, about who wants to sort of pursue music or pursue creativity and they don't necessarily know how to start or where to pick up?
Yeah.
Off?
I guess first thing, find a mentor, because mm-hmm. that could help. and honestly, my DMs are open for like young creatives. Like mm-hmm. if you want to, if you need some help, like I've always been open to helping people out. Like mm-hmm. I've got family friends that then come and ask me for help on like the creative side. Mm-hmm. So I'm always open to it. But yeah, first find someone that you can kind of go to, ask questions to, do your research on YouTube or on Instagram, join communities like PRS or mm-hmm. Help Musicians Union. Like these are all like bodies that put together like how-to guides mm-hmm. and to get the basics of the industry. Like, some people still my age still don't know what PRS is, and it baffles me. Like, as in musicians, like, mm-hmm. I don't expect you to know what PRS is, but it's a key royalty collecting site. Like, you make a lot of your income from PRS when your music gets played on radios. Mm-hmm. So it's crazy when someone says to me they're not on PRS and they release their own music. Mm-hmm. Baffles me.
Yeah.
So any musicians listening to this, get PRS, PPL, and all of these things. Like, they really help. And I learned all of this from the artist development camp that I went to from about the age of 13 till 17. But yeah, anyways, starting out, if you want to like sing, definitely put yourself on social media. I know it sucks that we have to be on social media, but it's honestly part of the job description now. Like, you cannot have a music career without social media and posting. So put covers out. If even if you want to just start with YouTube, put it out on YouTube, then put small 1 minute covers on Instagram, TikTok, wherever it is. Get that out there, because I feel like covers is a really big way to help you kind of just get seen. Even at like bigger stages, like, even though I've released so much music now, it's still so key for me to put covers out, and that's something I don't do enough of, and I know I should. But yeah, covers is a big thing. Whether that's just singing a cappella with a backing track, with an instrument, if you can play with an instrument, that'd be great. And just putting a video out. It doesn't have to be high quality, just put it out. That's one way. And then, like, honing in on your craft, so making sure that you go to lessons or just develop your vocals, make sure you do your vocal exercises. That's really key. Then, obviously, understanding the business side of it and everything. I guess if you want to start writing music, then, like, start your network, like, go to networking events. Like, Instagram is such a good place to network, like, just message producers in and around your area. Like, honestly, I go by Instagram. Instagram is the LinkedIn for creatives. I fully agree with, I fully think that. So yeah, just like, just message people. Like, it's not going to be weird, like, especially if it's on the creative end. Don't be weird with your messages, just like say, hey, you want to work together, sort of thing. And and people are always open to working. So doing that, literally collaboration is the best way forward. And yeah, I think just like having confidence in yourself, putting things out there, and just consistency is key. So whatever you do, just be really consistent with it.
Okay, talking of consistency, what's sort of upcoming for you? What do you, in terms of your dreaming forward, what do you want to be achieving soon? What are your milestones, goals? And tell me a little bit about
that. I mean, I'm yet to do my full like 2026 breakdown. I mean, before the year ends, I'll tend to like have like create a new like vision board, my goals for the year, and just set out what I want to do in the new year. But I know off the top of my head for now, like, I haven't put it down on paper yet, but one thing is regular releases. So this year I only released about 2 songs. Last year I did release an EP, so last year was quite a bit more consistent, but this year I only released 2 songs because I was trying to balance full-time work with music. But now that I'm doing full-time music, I can afford to do like regular releases. So I'm hoping to do like a release every 6 to 8 weeks. I'm really hoping that works. Doing that, doing
shows. I can
tell
you're an organizer. The way you're 6 to 8 weeks, you've got that penciled in the diary.
Because with music, it's good to like lead time of six weeks before you put something out. But then, yeah, like I feel like that's the consistency. Headline shows, like this one did well, so I'm hoping to do a few more. I'm like going to America, so hopefully, you know, we'll just collaborate with people there. Hopefully do some shows when I go to India. But like, these are all ideas. Like, I still need to figure out the logistics behind it, but it's the thought that comes first. So I just want to like put myself out there as much as I can. So anyone that's listening to me to this that wants to like work, hit me up. Because I just want to, just want to put myself out there, do as much as possible. And like a lot of things with music, it's like, you go into studio with someone, it may never get released, but like it might get released 3 years down the line. So it's always good to like, just do it. And now that I have the time to do it, like, I can just do it. And whether it works or not, that's up to fate, I think.
You got to go with intention and like really believe in your art and put as much as you can want to out there. 100%. And what comes of that?
Like, I just came from a studio session, had no idea, like, first time I was working with someone, no idea like what the end goal was, but it's just a vibe and see. And we came up with an amazing track, and it's probably not even for my page, it's probably for their page. But like, you know, that's the whole point of working with people. Like, it doesn't always have to be for your own page. Like, you could be writing for another artist, and you know, that it's like a bigger artist and it does better. Like, it's just being creative, essentially.
And also building those relationships, because you never know in the future
that could lead to something else.
Absolutely. And then you'll look back and be like, oh, that studio session in December was where this all started. So that's super exciting.
I always go back to like, I the reason, one, like, my biggest tracks with Bilal, like, I wouldn't have met him if I didn't go to this networking event. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't even a networking event, actually. It was another artist's album launch. Mm-hmm. And, like, I had no idea who was going to be there. I was going on my own. Mm-hmm. I was, like, I didn't really want to go because I was, like, what am I going to do on my own? And it's outside of London. It's not even within London. And I had to travel out from uni. Mm-hmm. But I forced myself to go. And I'm so glad I did, because it led me to Bilal. It led me to Farouk, who I did Ronnie with. And, like, it's got some of my biggest songs with mm-hmm. the people that I met at that event.
Yeah.
So now I always try to push myself to events. Even mm-hmm. if I, like, have this angst, no, I don't really want to go, mm-hmm. but I can physically go, I will try and force myself out.
Because you never know what's going to come of it.
100%.
It's also a really exciting concept. Like, you never know who you're going to meet. Yeah. You never know how this person is going to be important to you.
Yeah.
And it's all about building that community and 100%. Knowing, like, sort of where to give grace and be grateful for all those opportunities.
Sure.
Super exciting. For my final question, I want to ask you what I ask all my guests. Sure. Do you think of yourself as a dreamer? So often we get told not to daydream, not to get distracted, but to concentrate. But is there sometimes a necessity to sit and dream or fantasize about a reality to eventually break those boundaries and be a trailblazer?
No, 100%. If you don't dream, then, like, how are you going to get to somewhere big? Like, especially as a creative, I feel like creatives always dream big. Like, that's what and I'd always heard this. I mean, it's the same for academics. Like, if you aim to throw, I don't know if you might have heard this analogy before, but it's like, if you aim to throw really far, then you might get to the goal point, like the point. So I'm really explaining this really badly. Basically, like, let's say you want to hit a wall. Mm-hmm. Or like a stump that's like 2 meters away. Mm-hmm. If you aim for those 2 meters, you'll probably only hit throw the ball for a meter.
Yeah.
But if you aim to hit 3 meters away, you actually tend to reach the 2 meters because you're pushing further. Mm-hmm. And the same goes for dreaming. So like, we always end up like daydreaming a bit and dreaming really big. Mm-hmm. And by dreaming really, really big, you'll probably get to like something that you're actually really happy with. So always dream big, because then it will get you something that you never thought you would have initially in the first place.
Shoot for the moon and you'll end up amongst the stars.
You're good with your analogies.
That's always my go-to. Yeah. But I so totally get what you mean. Yeah. And I think it's almost that thing of not thinking about boundaries and just thinking about possibilities. Mm-hmm. And then where the boundaries come, they'll come. But you still made sure that every possibility was in your reach. Do you want to plug any social media?
Yeah, you can follow me on socials at Saloni_music, Saloni_music on TikTok, Instagram, everywhere. YouTube is Saloni Music as well.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Saloni, for joining me on Desi Dreamers.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to Desi Dreamers. I hope this story was a powerful reminder of the incredible resilience, creativity and determination that defines the South Asian diaspora. We've taken a journey which has explored the cultural influences, personal challenges and transformative moments that have shaped a unique narrative. Each episode of Desi Dreamers is a testament to the fact that our stories matter. That representation isn't just about seeing ourselves reflected, but about understanding the complex, beautiful journeys that bring us to our most authentic selves. Importantly, our cultural heritage is not a limitation, but our greatest source of strength. Desi Dreamers is powered by Transmission Roundhouse and is available on all major podcast platforms. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. And if you love today's story, please leave a review and share it with anyone who needs to hear about these incredible journeys. Next time, I'll be diving into another incredible story that proves our dreams have no boundaries. Until then, keep dreaming, keep believing, and most importantly, keep being unapologetically you. I'm Nikita Nachipan, and this has been Desi Dreamers.